Chapter 20. A Choice. You must not speak, Rosil said to Nynaeve. The slender, long-necked woman wore an orange dress slashed with yellow. At least, speak only when spoken to. You know the ceremony? Nynaeve nodded, her heart beating treacherously as they walked into the dungeon-like depths of the White Tower. Rosil was the new mistress of novices, and a member of the Yellow Aja by coincidence. Excellent, excellent, Rosil said. Might I suggest you move the ring to the third finger of your left hand? You may suggest it, Nynaeve said, but did not move the ring. She had been named Aes Sedai. She would not give in on that point. Rosil pursed her lips, but said nothing further. The woman had shown Nynaeve remarkable kindness during her short time in the White Tower, which had been a relief. Nynaeve had grown to expect that every yellow sister would regard her with disdain, or at least indifference. Oh, they thought she was talented, and many insisted on being trained by her, but they did not think of her as one of them. Not yet. This woman was different, and being a burr in her sandal was not a good repayment. It is important to me, Rosil, Nynaeve explained, that I not give any indication of disrespect for the Amyrlin. She named me Aes Sedai. To act as if I were merely accepted would be to undermine her words. This test is important. When the Amyrlin raised me, she never said that I need not be tested. But I am Aes Sedai. Rosil cocked her head, then nodded. Yes, I see. You are correct. Nynaeve stopped in the dim corridor. I want to thank you, and the others who have welcomed me these last days, Nier and Merimore. I had not assumed I would find acceptance here among you. There are some who resist change, dear, Rosil said. It will ever be so. But your new weaves are impressive. More importantly, they're effective. That earns you a warm welcome from me. Nynaeve smiled. Now, Rosil said, raising a finger, you might be Aes Sedai in the eyes of the Amyrlin and the Tower, but tradition still holds. No speaking for the rest of the ceremony, please. The lanky woman continued leading the way. Nynaeve followed, biting off a retort. She was nervous, but she wouldn't let her nerves rule her. Deeper into the tower they wound, and despite her determination to be calm, she found herself increasingly nervous. She was Aes Sedai, and she would pass this test. She'd mastered the 100 weaves. She didn't need to worry. Except, some women never returned from the test. These basements had a grand beauty to them. The smooth stone floor was leveled carefully. Lamps burned high on the walls. Likely those had required a sister or accepted to light them with the one power. Few people came down here, and most of the rooms were used for storage. It seemed a waste to her to put such care in a place rarely visited. Eventually they arrived at a pair of doors so large that Rosil had to use the one power to open them. It's an indication, Nynaeve thought, folding her arms. The vaulted hallways, the enormous door. This is here to show acceptance the importance of what they are about to do. The enormous gate-like doors swung open, and Nynaeve forced herself to master her nervousness. The last battle was looming. She would pass this test. She had important work to be about. Head held high, she entered the chamber. It was domed, with stand lamps around the perimeter. A large tarangreal dominated the center. It was an oval, narrowed at the top and bottom, that sat unsupported. Many tarangreal looked ordinary. That was not the case here. This oval was obviously something worked by the one power. It was made of metal, but the light changed colors as it reflected off the silvery sides, making the thing seem to glow and shift. Attend, Rosil said formally. There were other Aes Sedai in the room, one from each Aja, including, unfortunately, the red. They were all sitters, an oddity, perhaps because of Nynaeve's notoriety in the tower. Saeron from the brown, Eukiri of the gray, Barrasine from the red. Notably, Romanda from the yellow was there. She had insisted on taking part. She had been hard with Nynaeve so far. Egwene herself had come, one more than normal, and the Amyrlin as well. Nynaeve met the Amyrlin's eyes, and Egwene nodded. Unlike the test to be raised to accepted, which was made entirely by the Tarangreal, this test involved the sisters actively working to make Nynaeve prove herself. And Egwene would be among the most harsh, to show that she had been right in raising Nynaeve. "You come in ignorance, Nynaeve Almira," Rosil said. "How will you depart?" "In knowledge of myself," Nynaeve said. "For what reason have you been summoned here?" "To be tried." "For what reason should you be tried?" "To show that I'm worthy," Nynaeve said. Several of the women frowned, including Egwene. Those weren't the right words. Nynaeve was supposed to say that she wanted to learn whether or not she was worthy. But she was already Aes Sedai, so by definition she was worthy. She just had to prove it to the others. Rosil stumbled, but continued. "And for what would you be found worthy?" "To wear the shawl I have been given," Nynaeve said. She didn't say it to be arrogant. Once again, she simply stated the truth as she saw it. Egwene had raised her. She wore the shawl already. Why pretend that she didn't? This test was administered clad in the light. She began taking off her dress. "I will instruct you," Rosil said. "You will see this sign upon the ground." She raised her fingers, forming weaves that made a glowing symbol in the air. A six-pointed star, two overlapping triangles. Saeron embraced the source and wove a weave of spirit. Nynaeve suppressed the urge to embrace the source herself. "Only a little longer," she thought, "and then nobody will be able to doubt me." Saeron touched her with the weave of spirit. "Remember what must be remembered," she murmured. That weave had something to do with memory. What was its purpose? The six-pointed star hovered in Nynaeve's vision. "When you see that sign, you will go to it immediately," Rosil said. "Go at a steady pace, neither hurrying nor hanging back. Only when you reach it may you embrace the source. The weaving required must begin immediately, and you may not leave that sign until it is completed." "Remember what must be remembered," Saeron said again. "When the weave is complete," Rosil said, "you will see that sign again, marking the way you must go, again at a steady pace without hesitation. Remember what must be remembered. 100 times you will weave, in the order that you have been given and in perfect composure. Remember what must be remembered," Saeron said one final time. Nynaeve felt the weaving of spirit settle into her. It was rather like healing. She removed her dress and shift as the other sisters knelt beside the Tarangreal, performing complex weaves of all 5 powers. They caused it to glow brightly, the colors on its surface shifting and changing. Rosil cleared her throat, and Nynaeve blushed, handing her the pile of garments, then took off her great serpent ring and placed it on top, followed by Lan's ring, which she normally wore around her neck. Rosil took the clothing. The other sisters were completely absorbed in their work. The Tarangreal began glowing a pure white in the center, then started to revolve slowly, grinding against the stone. Nynaeve took a deep breath, striding forward. She paused beside the Tarangreal, stepped through, and where was she? Nynaeve frowned. This didn't look like the Two Rivers. She stood in a village made of huts. Waves lapped against a sandy beach to her left, and the village ran up a slope toward a rocky shelf to her right. A distant mountain towered above. An island of some sort. The air was humid, the breeze calm. People walked between huts, calling good-naturedly to one another. A few stopped to stare at her. She looked down at herself, realizing for the first time that she was naked. She blushed furiously. Who had taken her clothing? When she found the person responsible, she'd switched them so soundly they wouldn't be able to sit for weeks. A robe was hanging from a nearby clothesline. She forced herself to remain calm as she walked over and pulled it free. She would find its owner and pay them. She couldn't very well walk about without a stitch. She threw the robe on over her head. The ground shook suddenly. The gentle waves grew louder, crashing against the beach. Nynaeve gasped, steadying herself against the clothesline pole. Above, the mountain began spurting smoke and ashes. Nynaeve clutched the pole as the rocky shelf nearby began to break apart, boulders tumbling down the incline. People yelled. She had to do something. As she walked about, she saw a six-pointed star carved into the ground. She wanted to run for it, but she knew she needed to walk carefully. Keeping calm was difficult. As she walked, her heart fluttered with terror. She was going to be crushed. She reached the star pattern just as a large shower of stones rumbled toward her, smashing huts. Despite her fear, Nynaeve quickly formed the correct weave, a weave of air that formed a wall. She set it in front of herself, and the stones thudded against the air, forced back. There were hurt people in the village. She turned from the star pattern to help, but as she did, she saw the same six-pointed star woven in reeds and hanging from the door of a nearby hut. She hesitated. She could not fail. She walked to the hut and passed through the doorway. Then she froze. What was she doing in this dark, cold cavern? And why was she wearing this robe of thick, scratchy fibers? She had completed the first of the 100 weaves. She knew this, but nothing else. Frowning to herself, she walked through the cavern. Light shone through cracks in the ceiling, and she saw a greater pool of it ahead. The way out. She walked from the cavern to find that she was in the waste. She raised a hand to shade her eyes from the bright sunlight. There wasn't a soul in sight. She walked forward, feet crunching on weeds and scalded by hot stones. The heat was overwhelming. Soon each step was exhausting. Fortunately, some ruins lay ahead. Shade. She wanted to run for it, but she had to remain calm. She walked up to the stones, and her feet fell on rock shaded by a broken wall. It was so cool, she sighed in relief. A pattern of bricks lay nearby in the ground, and they made a six-pointed star. Unfortunately, that star was back out in the sunlight. She reluctantly left the shade and walked toward the pattern. Drums thumped in the distance. Nynaeve spun. Disgusting brown-furred creatures began to climb over a nearby hill, carrying axes that dripped with red blood. The Trollocs looked wrong to her. She'd seen Trollocs before, though she didn't remember where. These were different. A new breed, perhaps? With thicker fur, eyes hidden in the recesses of their faces. Nynaeve walked faster but did not break into a run. It was important to keep calm. That was completely stupid. Why would she need to or want to keep herself from running when there were Trollocs nearby? If she died because she wasn't willing to hasten her step, it would be her own fault. Keep composure. Don't move too quickly. She maintained her steady pace, reaching the six-pointed star as the Trollocs drew close. She began the weave she was required to make and split off a thread of fire. She sent an enormous spray of heat away from her, burning the nearest of the beasts to cinders. Jaw set against her fear, she crafted the rest of the required weave. She split her weaves a half dozen times and finished the complicated thing in mere moments. She set it in place, then nodded. There. Other Trollocs were coming, and she burned them away with a wave of her hand. The six-pointed star was carved into the side of an archway of stone. She walked toward it, trying to keep from looking nervously over her shoulder. More Trollocs were coming, more than she could possibly kill. She reached the archway and stepped through. Nynaeve finished the 47th weave, which caused the sounds of bells in the air. She was exhausted. She'd had to make this weave while standing on top of an impossibly narrow tower hundreds of feet in the air. Wind buffeted her, threatening to blow her free. An archway appeared below, in the dark night air. It seemed to grow right out of the pillar's side a dozen feet below her, parallel to the ground, its opening toward the sky. It held the six-pointed star. Gritting her teeth, she leaped off the spire and fell through the archway. She landed in a puddle. Her clothing was gone. What had happened to it? She stood up, growling to herself. She was angry. She didn't know why, but someone had done something to her. She was so tired. That was their fault, whoever they were. As she focused on that thought, it became more clear to her. She couldn't remember what they'd done, but they were definitely to blame. She had cuts across both of her arms. Had she been whipped? The cuts hurt something fierce. Dripping wet, she looked around. She'd completed 47 of the 100 weaves. She knew that, but nothing else, other than the fact that somebody very badly wanted her to fail. She wasn't going to let them win. She rose out of the puddle, determined to be calm, and found some clothing nearby. It was garishly colored, bright pink and yellow with a generous helping of red. It seemed an insult. She put it on anyway. She walked down a path in the bog, stepping around sinkholes and pools of stagnant water until she found a six-pointed star drawn in the mud. She began the next weave, which would make a burning blue star shoot into the air. Something bit at her neck. She slapped her hand at it, killing a black fly. Well, no surprise that she'd find those in this dank swamp. She would be glad to... Another bite on her arm. She slapped at it. The very air started to buzz, flies zipping around her. Nynaeve gritted her teeth, continuing the weave. More and more bites prickled on her arms. She couldn't kill them all. Could she get rid of the flies with a weave? She began a weave of air to blow the air around her, but was interrupted as she heard screams. It was faint over the buzzing of the flies, but it sounded like a child trapped in the bog. Nynaeve took a step toward the sounds and opened her mouth to call, but black flies swarmed into her mouth, choking her. They got at her eyes, and she had to squeeze them shut. That buzzing... The screams, the biting, light, they were in her throat, in her lungs. Finish the weave. You must finish the weave. She continued somehow, despite the pain. The sound of the insects was so loud that she could barely hear the whoosh of the fiery star as it blasted into the air. She quickly wove a weave to blow the flies away, and once she did, she looked about. She coughed and trembled. She could feel the flies sticking to the inside of her throat. She didn't see any child in danger. Had it been a trick of her ears? She did see another six-pointed star above a door carved into a tree. She walked toward it as the flies buzzed around her again. Calm. She had to be calm. Why? It made no sense. She did it anyway, walking with eyes closed as the flies swarmed her. She reached out, feeling for the door and pulling it open. She stepped through. She pulled to a stop inside the building, wondering why she was coughing so much. Was she ill? She leaned against the wall, exhausted, angry. Her legs were covered in scrapes, and her arms itched with some kind of insect bites. She groaned, looking down at her garish clothing. What could possibly have possessed her to wear red, yellow, and pink together? She stood up with a sigh and continued down the rickety hallway. The planks that made up the floor rattled as she walked, and the plaster on the walls was broken and crumbling. She reached a doorway and peeked in. The small chamber contained four small brass beds. The mattresses had straw peeking from the seams. Each bed bore a young child clutching a ratty blanket. Two of them were coughing, and all four looked pale and sickly. Nynaeve gasped, hurrying into the room. She knelt beside the first child, a boy of perhaps 4 years. She checked his eyes, then told him to cough as she listened at his chest. He had the creeping sickness. "Who is caring for you?" Nynaeve demanded.
"Mistress Mala runs the orphanage," the child said in a weak voice. "We haven't seen her in a long time."
"Please," a young girl said from the next bed.
She had bloodshot eyes, her skin so pale it was practically white.
"Some water? Could I have some water?"
She trembled. The other two were crying, pitiful, weak sounds. Light! There wasn't a single window in the room, and Nynaeve saw roaches scuttling under the beds. Who would leave children in such conditions? "Hush," she said. "I'm here now. I'll care for you." She'd need to channel to heal them. Then, no, she thought. "I can't do that. I can't channel until I reach the star." She would brew drafts then. Where was her herb pouch? She looked around the room, searching for a source of water. She froze. There was another room across the hallway. Had that been there before? A rug on its floor bore the symbol of the six-pointed star. She rose. The children whimpered. "I'll return," Nynaeve said, stepping toward that room. Each step twisted her heart. She was abandoning them. But no, she was only walking into the next room, wasn't she? She reached the rug and began to weave. Just this one quick weaving, then she could help. She found herself crying as she worked. "I've been here before," she thought, "or a place like it, a situation such as this." She found herself more and more angry. How could she channel with those children calling for her? They were dying. She completed the weave, then watched it blow out jets of air, ruffling her dress. She reached for her braid and held it as a door appeared on the side of the room. A small glass window was set into the top, and it bore the six-pointed star. She had to continue. She heard the weeping children. Tears in her eyes, heart breaking, she walked to the door. It grew worse. She left people to be drowned, beheaded, and buried alive. One of the worst was when she had to form a weave while villagers were consumed by enormous spiders with bright red fur and crystalline eyes. She hated spiders. Sometimes she would appear naked. That stopped bothering her. Though she couldn't remember anything specific but the number of the weave she was on, she understood, somehow, that nudity was nothing compared to the other terrors she'd seen. She stumbled through a stone archway, memories of a house on fire fading from her mind. This was the 81st weave. She remembered that. That and her fury. She wore a singed dress of sackcloth. How had she burned it? She stood up straight, holding her head, arms throbbing, back feeling whipped, legs and toes bearing cuts and scratches. She was in the Two Rivers. Except it wasn't the Two Rivers. Not as she remembered it. Some of the buildings smoldered, still burning.
"They're coming again," a voice yelled.
Master Alvir. Why was he holding a sword? People she knew, people dear to her. Perrin, Master Alvir, Mistress Aldonel, Eric Buttiger, stood beside a low wall, all holding weapons. Some waved to her.
"Nynaeve," Perrin called. "Shadow spawn! We need your help!"
Enormous shadows moved on the other side of the wall. Shadow spawn of terrible size. Not Trollocs, but something far worse. She could hear roars. She had to help. She moved toward Perrin, but froze as she saw, across the green in the other direction, a six-pointed star painted on a hillside.
Nynaeve!
Perrin sounded desperate. He began fighting at something that reached over the wall, tentacles of midnight black. Perrin chopped at them with an axe as one snatched up Eric and pulled him, screaming, into the darkness. Nynaeve began to walk toward the star, calm, measured.
That was stupid.
An Aes Sedai had to be calm, she knew that. But an Aes Sedai also needed to be able to act, to do what was needed to help those who needed it. It didn't matter what it cost her personally. These people needed her. So she started to run. Even that didn't feel like enough. She ran to get to the star, but still she left people she loved to fight alone. She knew she couldn't channel until she reached the six-pointed star. That made absolutely no sense. Shadowspawn were attacking. She had to channel. She embraced the source, and something seemed to try to stop her. Something like a shield. She pushed it aside with difficulty and power flooded her. She began flinging fire at the monster, burning off a tentacle as it grabbed for Perrin. Nynaeve continued throwing fire until she reached the six-pointed star. There she wove the 81st weave, which created three rings of fire in the air. She worked furiously, attacking at the same time. She didn't know the point of creating this weave, but she knew she had to finish it. So she increased the strength of the weave, making the burning rings extremely large. Then she began hurling them at the creatures. Massive halos of flame crashed into the dark things, killing them. There was a six-pointed star on the roof of Master Alvir's inn. Had it been burned there? Nynaeve ignored it, venting her anger at the things with tentacles. No, this is important. More important than the two rivers. I must continue on. Feeling like an utter coward, but knowing it was the right thing to do, she ran to the inn, passing through the doorway. Nynaeve lay weeping on the ground beside a broken archway. She was on the last of the 100 weaves. She could barely move. Her face was streaked with tears. She had hollow memories of fleeing battles, of leaving children to die, of never being able to do enough. Her shoulder bled, a wolf's bite. Her legs were flayed as if she'd walked through a long patch of thorns. All across her body were burns and blisters. She was naked. She rose to her knees, which were scraped and bleeding. Her braid ended in a smoldering stump about a hand's span below her shoulders. She retched to the side, shivering. So sick, so weak. How could she continue? No, they will not beat me. She slowly raised herself to her feet. She was in a small room, harsh sunlight peeking through cracks between the wallboards. A bundle of white cloth lay on the ground. She picked it up, unfolding it. It was a white dress with the colors of the Ajahs banded at the bottom. The clothing of an accepted in the White Tower. She dropped it. I am Aes Sedai, she said, stepping over the robe and pushing open the door. Better to go naked than to give in to that lie. Outside the door, she found another dress, this time yellow. That was more proper. She allowed herself the time to put it on, though she couldn't stop trembling, and her fingers were so tired she could barely make them work. Her blood stained the cloth. Dress on, she inspected her surroundings. She was on a hillside in the Blight, the ground covered in weeds that bore the distinctive dark marks. Why was there a shack in the Blight? And why had she been inside of it? She felt so tired. She wanted to go back into the shack and sleep. No, she would continue. She trudged up the hill. At its top, she looked down on a land covered in broken rubble and pockets of darkness. Lakes, if they could be called that. The liquid seemed thick and oily.
dark shapes moved within them.
Valkyr, she thought, stunned that she recognized the place. The Seven Towers, only rubble now. The Thousand Lakes corrupted. The place of land's heritage.
She stepped forward, but her toe hit something. A stone beneath her feet had been carved with a small symbol, the six-pointed star. She sighed in relief. It was almost through. She began the final weave. Below, a man stumbled out from behind a mound of rubble, swinging expertly with his sword. She knew him, even at a distance. That strong figure, square face, color-shifting cloak and dangerous way of walking.
Lan!
She screamed. He was surrounded by beasts that looked like wolves, but too large. They had dark fur, and their teeth flashed as they lunged toward Lan. Dark hounds, an entire pack. Nynaeve finished the 100th weave with a start. She hadn't realized she'd continued it. A shower of colorful specks burst into the air around her. She watched them fall, feeling used. She heard a sound over her shoulder, but when she glanced, there was nothing there, just the shack. The six-pointed star hung over a door at its back, the symbol made of bits of gemstones. That door hadn't been there before. She took a step toward the shack, then looked back. Lan swung about him with his sword, forcing the dark hounds away. One bit of saliva from those beasts would kill him.
Lan! She screamed. Run!
He didn't hear her. The six-pointed star. She needed to walk to it. She blinked, then looked down at her hands. In the direct center of each palm was a tiny scar, almost unnoticeable. Seeing them sparked a memory in her.
Nynaeve. I love you.
This was a test. She could remember that now. It was a test to force her to choose between him and the White Tower. She'd made that choice once, but she'd known it wasn't real. This wasn't real either, was it? She raised a hand to her head, mind cloudy. That is my husband down there, she thought.
No, I will not play this game.
She screamed, weaving fire and throwing it toward one of the Dark Hounds. The creature burst into flames, but the fire didn't seem to hurt it. Nynaeve stepped forward, throwing more fire. Useless. The hounds just kept attacking. She refused to give in to her exhaustion. She banished it, growing calm, controlled.
Ice. They wanted to push her? See what she could do? Well, let it be.
She reached out, drawing in an immense amount of the one power.
Then she wove balefire.
The line of pure light sprang from her fingers, warping the air around it. She hit one of the dark hounds and seemed to puncture it, the light continuing on into the ground. The entire landscape rumbled, and Nynaeve stumbled. Lan fell to the ground. The dark hounds leaped at him.
No,
Nynaeve thought, righting herself, weaving balefire again. She blasted another hound, then another. More of the monsters leapt from behind rock formations. Where were they all coming from? Nynaeve strode forward, blasting with the forbidden weave. Each strike made the ground tremble, as if in pain. The balefire shouldn't puncture the ground like that. Something was wrong. She reached Lan's side. He had broken his leg.
Nynaeve, he said. You must go!
She ignored his words, kneeling down and weaving balefire as another hound rounded the rubble. Their number was increasing, and she was so tired. Each time she channeled, she felt it would surely be her last. But it could not be. Not with Lan in danger. She wove a complex healing, putting every bit of strength she had left into it, mending his leg. He scrambled up and grabbed his sword, turning to fend off a dark hound. They fought together, her with balefire, him with steel. But his swings were lethargic, and it took her a few heartbeats longer each time she made the balefire. The ground was shaking and rumbling, ruins crashing to the ground.
Lan, she said, be ready to run.
What?
With her last ounce of strength, she wove balefire and aimed it directly downward in front of them. The ground undulated in agony, almost like a living thing. The earth split nearby, darkhounds tumbling in. Nynaeve collapsed, the one power slipping from her. She was too tired to channel. Lan grabbed her arm.
We must go!
She hauled herself to her feet, taking his hand. Together they ran up the rumbling hillside. Darkhounds howled behind, some of the pack leaping the rift. Nynaeve ran for all she was worth, clinging to Lan's hand. They crested the hill. The ground was shaking so terribly, she couldn't believe the shack was still standing. She stumbled down the hill toward it, Lan with her. He tripped, crying out in pain. His hand slipped from her fingers. She spun. Behind them, a flood of darkhounds crested the hilltop, snarling, teeth flashing and spittle flying from their mouths. Lan waved for her to go, his eyes wide.
No!
She grabbed him by the arm and, heaving, hauled him down the slope. Together they tumbled through the doorway and... And gasping, Nynaeve fell from the Turangreal. She collapsed alone on the cold floor, naked, shaking. In a flood, she remembered it all, each and every horrible moment of the test, each betrayal, each frustrating weave, the impotence, the screams of the children, the deaths of people she knew and loved. She wept against the floor, curling up. Her entire body was afire with pain. Her shoulder, legs, arms, and back still bled. She was burned to blisters in swaths across her body, and the greater part of her braid was gone. Her unraveled hair fell across her face as she tried to banish the memories of what she had done. She heard groans from nearby, and through bleary eyes she saw the Aes Sedai in the circle break off their weaves and slump. She hated them. She hated each and every one of them. Light, Saren's voice. Someone heal her! Everything was growing blurry. Voices grew muddled, like sounds underwater. Peaceful sounds. Something cold washed over her. She gasped, her eyes opening wide at the icy shock of the healing. Rosil knelt beside her. The woman looked worried. The pain left Nynaeve's body, but her exhaustion increased tenfold, and the pain inside, it remained. Oh, light! She could hear the children screaming. Well, Saren said from nearby, seems that she'll live. Now would someone please tell me what in the name of creation itself that was? She sounded furious. I've been a part of many a raising, even one where the woman didn't survive. But I have never in all of my days seen a woman put through what this one just suffered. She had to be tested properly, Rubinda said. Properly? Saren demanded, livid. Nynaeve didn't have the strength to look at them. She lay, breathing in and out. Properly? Saren repeated. That wasn't proper. That was downright vengeful, Rubinda. Almost any one of those tests was beyond what I've seen demanded of other women. You should be ashamed. All of you. Light, look what you've done to the girl. It is unimportant, Barasine the Red said in a cold voice. She failed the test. What? Nynaeve croaked, finally looking up. The Turangreal had fallen dim, and Rosil had fetched a blanket and Nynaeve's clothing. Egwene stood to the side, arms clasped before her. Her face was serene as she listened to the others. She would not have a vote, but the others would, regarding whether Nynaeve had passed the test or not. You failed, child, Barasine said, regarding Nynaeve with an emotionless stare. You did not show proper decorum. Lelaine of the Blue nodded, looking annoyed to be agreeing with a red.
This was a test of your ability to be calm as an Aes Sedai. You did not show that. The others looked uncomfortable. You weren't supposed to speak of the specifics of a testing. Nynaeve knew that much. She also knew that most of the time, failing and dying were the same thing, though she wasn't terribly surprised to hear claims that she'd failed, now that she thought about it. She had broken the rules of the test. She'd run in order to save Perrin and others. She'd channeled before she should have. She had trouble summoning regret. Every other emotion was, for the moment, consumed by the hollow loss she felt. "Barrasine does have a point," Cianne said, reluctant. "By the end, you were openly furious, and you ran to reach many of the markers. And then there is the matter of the forbidden weave, most troubling. I do not say you should fail, but there are irregularities." Nynaeve tried to climb to her feet. Rosil placed a hand on her shoulder to forbid her, but Nynaeve took the arm and used it as support, pulling herself up on unsteady legs. She took the blanket and wrapped it around her shoulders, holding it closed at the front. She felt so drained. "I did what I had to do. Who among you would not run if you saw people in danger? Who among you would forbid herself to channel if she saw shadow spawn attacking? I acted as an Aes Sedai should." "This test," Barrasine said, "is meant to ensure that a woman is capable of dedicating herself to a greater task, to see that she can ignore the distractions of the moment and seek a higher good." Nynaeve sniffed. "I completed the weaves I needed to. I maintained my focus. Yes, I broke my calm, but I kept a cool enough head to complete my tasks. One should not demand calmness for the mere sake of calmness, and a prohibition on running when there are people you need to save is foolish. My goal in this test was to prove that I deserve to be Aes Sedai. Well then, I could argue that the lives of the people I saw were more important than gaining that title. If losing my title is what would be required to save someone's life, and if there were no other consequences, I'd do it. Every time. Not saving them wouldn't be serving a higher good. It would just be selfish." Barrasine's eyes opened wide with anger. Nynaeve turned to walk with some difficulty to the side of the room where she could sit on a bench and rest. The women gathered together to speak softly, and Egwene walked, still serene, over to Nynaeve. The Amyrlin sat down beside her. Though she had been allowed to participate in the test and create some of the experiences that tested Nynaeve, the choice of the raising would be up to the others. "You've angered them," Egwene said, "and confused them."
"I spoke the truth,"
Nynaeve grumbled. "Perhaps," Egwene said. "But I wasn't speaking of your outburst. During the test, you flouted the orders you were given."
"I couldn't flout them. I didn't remember that I'd been given them. I could remember what I was supposed to do, but not the reasons."
Nynaeve grimaced.
"That's why I broke the rules. I thought they were just arbitrary. I couldn't remember why I wasn't supposed to run, so in the face of seeing people die, it seemed silly to walk."
"The rules are supposed to hold strongly, even though you don't remember them," Egwene said. "And you should not have been able to channel before reaching the marker. That is in the very nature of the test."
Nynaeve frowned.
"Then how? You've spent too much time in Tel Aran Riod. This test, it seems to function much in the same way as the world of dreams. What we create in our minds became your surroundings."
Egwene clicked her tongue, shaking her head.
"I warned them that this might be a danger. Your practice in the world of dreams made you innately able to break the test."
Nynaeve didn't reply to that, feeling sick. What if she did fail? being cast out of the tower now after getting so close?
I think your infractions might help you, however,
Egwene said softly. What?
You're too experienced to have been given this test,
Egwene explained.
In a way, what happened is proof that you deserved the shawl when I granted it to you. You performed each of the weaves expertly with speed and skill. I particularly liked the way you used useless weaves on occasion to attack the things you saw.
The fight in the two rivers, Nynaeve said. That one was you, wasn't it? The others don't know the place well enough to create it.
You can sometimes create visions and situations based on the mind of the woman being tested, Egwene said. It is an odd experience using this Tarangreal, one that I'm not certain I understand.
But the two rivers was you?
Yes, Egwene admitted.
And the last one? With Lan?
Egwene nodded. I'm sorry. I thought that if I didn't do it, nobody would...
I'm glad that you did, Nynaeve said. It showed me something.
It did?
Nynaeve nodded, back against the wall, holding the blanket in place and closing her eyes. I realized that if I had to choose between coming in Aes Sedai and going with Lan, I'd choose Lan. What people call me doesn't change anything inside of me. Lan, however, he is more than a title. I can still channel. I can still be me if I never become Aes Sedai. But I would never be myself again if I abandoned him. The world changed when I married him. She felt freed somehow, realizing it and saying it.
Pray the others don't realize that, Egwene said.
It would not be good for them to determine that you would place anything before the White Tower. I wonder if, Nynaeve said, we sometimes put the White Tower as an institution before the people we serve. I wonder if we let it become a goal in itself instead of a means to help us achieve greater goals.
Devotion is important, Nynaeve. The White Tower protects and guides the world.
And yet so many of us do it without families, Nynaeve said. Without love. Without passion beyond our own particular interests. So even while we try to guide the world, we separate ourselves from it. We risk arrogance, Egwene. We always assume we know best, but risk making ourselves unable to fathom the people we claim to serve.
Egwene seemed troubled. Don't voice those ideas too much. At least not today. They're already frustrated enough with you. But this testing was brutal, Nynaeve. I'm sorry. I couldn't be seen favoring you, but perhaps I should have put a stop to it. You did what you weren't supposed to, and that drove the others to be increasingly severe. They saw that sick children hurt you, so they put more and more of them into the test. Many seemed to consider your victories a personal affront, a contest of wills. That drove them to be harsh, cruel even.
I survived, Nynaeve said, eyes closed, and I learned a great deal about me and about us. She wanted to be Aes Sedai, fully and truly accepted. She wanted it badly. But in the end, if these people chose to refuse her their approval, she knew she could continue on and do what she needed to do anyway. Eventually, the sitters, trailed by Rosil, walked up. Nynaeve hauled herself to her feet to be respectful.
We must discuss the forbidden weave you used, Saren said, stern.
It is the only way I know to destroy Darkhounds, Nynaeve said. It was needed.
You do not have the right to decide that, Saren said. What you did destabilized the Tarangreal. You could have destroyed it, killing yourself and perhaps us. We want you to swear that you will never use that weave again.
I won't do that, Nynaeve said tiredly.
And if it means the difference between gaining the shawl or losing it forever?
Giving an oath like that would be foolish, Nynaeve said.
I could find myself in a situation where people would die if I didn't use it. Light? I'll be fighting in the last battle alongside Rand. What if I were to get to Sheol Ghul and discover that without Balefire I could not help the dragons stop the Dark One? Would you have me choose between a foolish oath and the fate of the world?
You think you're going to Sheol Ghul? Rupinda asked, incredulous.
I'm going to be there, Nynaeve said softly. It is not a question. Rand has asked it of me, though I would have gone if he hadn't.
They shared a look, seeming troubled.
If you're going to raise me, Nynaeve said, then you'll just have to trust my judgment on Balefire. If you don't trust me to know when to use a very dangerous weave and when not to, then I'd rather you not raise me.
I would be careful, Egwene said to the women. Refusing the shawl to the woman who helped cleanse the taint from Sidene, the woman who defeated Mogadine herself in battle, the woman married to the king of Malkyr, would set a very dangerous precedent.
Saeryn looked at the others. Three nods. Yukiri, Siayne, and surprisingly, Romanda. Three shakes of the head. Rubinda, Barasine, Lilaine. That left only Saeryn, the deciding vote. The brown turned back to her.
Nynaeve Almira, I declare that you have passed this test, narrowly.
To the side, Egwene let out a soft, almost inaudible sigh of relief. Nynaeve realized she'd been holding her own breath.
It is done, Rosil said, clapping her hands together. Let no one ever speak of what has passed here. It is for us to share in silence with she who experienced it. It is done.
The women nodded in agreement, even those who had voted against Nynaeve. Nobody would know that Nynaeve had nearly failed. They had probably confronted her about the Balefire directly, rather than seeking formal punishment, because of the tradition of not speaking of what happened in the Turangreal. Rosil clapped again.
Nynaeve Almira, you will spend the night in prayer and contemplation of the burdens you will take up on the morrow when you don the shawl of an Aes Sedai. It is done.
She clapped a third and final time.
Thank you, Nynaeve said. But I already have my shawl and...
She cut off as Egwene gave her a glare. A serene glare, but a glare nonetheless. Perhaps Nynaeve had pushed things far enough tonight already.
I will be happy to follow tradition, Nynaeve continued, discarding her objection.
So long as I am allowed to do one very important thing first. Then I will return and fulfill tradition.
Nynaeve needed a gateway to get where she was going. She hadn't specifically told the others she'd be leaving the tower to see to her task, but she hadn't said she wouldn't, either.
She hustled through the dark camp of tents which sat just outside a partially built wall. The night sky was dim, with those clouds covering it, and fires burned at the perimeter of the camp. Perhaps too many fires. Those here were being extremely cautious. Fortunately, the guards had allowed her into the camp without comment. The Great Serpent Ring worked wonders when applied in the right locations. They'd even told her where to find the woman she sought. In truth, Nynaeve had been surprised to find these tents outside rather than inside, the walls of the Black Tower. These women had been sent to bond Ashaman, as Rand had offered. But according to the guards, Egwene's envoy had been made to wait. The Ashaman had said that others had the first choice, whatever that meant. Egwene probably knew more. She'd sent messengers back and forth with the women here, particularly to warn them about Black Sisters who might be among them. Those they'd known of had vanished before the first messengers arrived. Nynaeve hadn't the mind to ask more details at the moment. She had another task. She stepped up to the proper tent, feeling so tired from the testing that she felt she would soon tumble to the ground in a flurry of yellow cloth. A few warders passed through the camp nearby, watching her with calm expressions. The tent before her was a simple gray thing. It was lit with a faint glow, and shadows moved inside.
Mirel, Nynaeve said loudly, I would speak with you.
She was surprised at how strong her voice sounded. She didn't feel that she had much strength remaining. The shadows paused and then moved again. The tent flaps rustled, and a confused face peered out. Mirel wore a blue nightgown that was almost translucent, and one of her warders, a bear of a man with a thick black beard after the Ilianer fashion, sat shirtless on the tent floor inside.
Child, Mirel said, sounding surprised, what are you doing here?
She was an olive-skinned beauty with long black hair and rounded curves. Nynaeve had to stop herself from reaching for her braid. It was too short now to tug. That was going to take a lot of getting used to.
You have something that belongs to me, Nynaeve said.
That depends on opinion, child.
Mirel frowned.
I was raised today, Nynaeve said. Formally. I passed the testing. We are equals now, Mirel.
She left the second part unsaid, that Nynaeve was the stronger of the two. Not truly equals, then.
Return tomorrow, Mirel said. I am occupied.
She moved to turn back into the tent. Nynaeve caught the woman's arm.
I have never thanked you, she said, though she had to grit her teeth to get the words out. I do so now. He lives because of you, I realize that. However, Mirel, this is not a time to push me. Today I have seen people I love slaughtered. I have been forced to consign children to living torment. I have been burned, scourged, and harrowed. I swear to you, woman, if you do not pass me Land's bond, this very moment I will step into that tent and teach you the meaning of obedience. Do not press me. In the morning, I swear the three oaths. I am free of them for one more night.
Mirel froze. Then she sighed and stepped back out of the tent.
So be it.
She closed her eyes, weaving spirit and sending the weaves into Nynaeve. It felt like an object being shoved physically into her mind. Nynaeve gasped, her surroundings spinning. Mirel turned and slipped back into her tent. Nynaeve slid down until she was sitting on the ground. Something was blossoming inside her mind. An awareness.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
It was him. And he was still alive.
Blessed light, she thought, eyes closed.
Thank you.